Blog Talk Radio.
Monday evening. Once again, we bring you the Eastern Airlines Radio Talk Show. This evening, we are coming to you from Jacksonville, Florida, Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts, Delray Beach, Florida, Roaring Gap, North Carolina, Grand Junction, Colorado, and the Villages, that's up near Ocala, Florida. I'm Jim Hart, and I'm here on beautiful Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. We are an all-talk show tonight. So if you have something you want to talk about or to ask your host, we'll certainly welcome your call. Let me tell you how to reach us. First, if you're listening to us live now, you've already discovered how to tune us in. Second, if you'd like to talk with us live on the show, just call us at 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. Let me repeat those numbers. 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. Now, once you've called into the program and you want to go live with us, then you need only to press the number one button on your telephone dial, and that will let us know that you're available for an on-the-air conversation. Our hosts for tonight's show include Jan Buskai in Delray Beach, Florida. Hi, Jan. Chuck Albright in the Villages near Ocala, Florida. Hello, Chuck. Steve Thompson up in cool Roaring Gap, North Carolina. How's that temperature tonight, Steve? Bill Joseph.
Well, it's in the mid-60s, and we're having a thunderstorm. And hi, Jim.
Okay, Bill Joseph in Grand Junction, Colorado. Hi, Bill. I know you said today it's kind of warm out there. And
pushing 100 degrees, Jim.
Oh, and Neil Holland in Jacksonville, Florida.
Hello,
Neil.
Hey.
We have some additional radio show information that we would like to tell you about. Neil, can you tell us about the new show?
Yes, and thanks, Jim. If you're interested in other airlines in addition to Eastern Airlines, we are happy to tell you about a new show broadcast every Sunday at 6:30 p.m. It's called the Airline Radio Talk Show, and it can be heard by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/CAPTNEAL. That's Captain Neil. Let me repeat that again. www.blogtalkradio, just like you reached us tonight, blogtalkradio.com/CAPTNEAL, CAPTNEAL. And just follow the same instructions Jim gave out earlier. The past Saturday was our first show, and it can be found in the archive as Episode 1 if you go to the website that I just mentioned on air. Now, our first show was about National Airlines, and we had a good time, Jim and I, talking for about a half hour. The show's only a half hour long, by the way. It is a pilot show. I guess the first show is always considered to be the pilot show to see if we liked it. And we, of course, didn't have any callers, not expecting any callers, because we really hadn't advertised the radio show. But we settled on National Airlines and included among our discussion about things that we knew about talking about Eastern Airlines. On that show, it was National Airlines, and we talked about its founder, George T. Baker, and then going over to Louis Bud Maytag, and then it's being sold to Pan American, of course, back in 1982. And so we had fun talking about that, and also we played some of the commercials of National Airlines. Do you remember, guys, about the commercials that National had? They were really clever commercials. They kind of catered to the businessman. They had, back in those days, of course, those were the days of hot pants? Anybody want to talk about that? But at any rate,
I voted for them and encouraged them.
With Eastern, but that was back when Captain Eddie was saying, no, we want stewards instead of stewardesses. But we had a good time. We talked about, you know, I think the commercials that Maytag put in place was Fly Me. Do you recall those commercials, Fly Me? Chuck, you had somebody that you knew that was actually on one of the airplanes, Fly Me.
Yeah, there was a friend of mine. She was a executive secretary to the vice president, and one of the planes was named Geraldine, and that was her name. And I asked her about it, and she said they went around and asked some of the girls who worked in the home office there, and if they would be willing to have their name painted on an airplane. And some of the, some of the flight attendants that had got some accolades from the company, they got their names on the airplane too.
Wasn't the home office in Atlanta?
No,
I think it was in Miami.
Miami,
oh, was it? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, after the show, Jim, I was looking at some of the notes that I had, and when Maytag had the operation in Miami, of course, headquarters down there, The corporate office, I don't know exactly at that time, it wasn't the new building that we all remember, the round building over there on Lejeune Road at the entrance of Miami International Airport. But I'm not certain. I think it was over on 36th Street, but I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
George T. Baker, the founder in 1934 of National Airlines, was very frugal in the way he operated the airlines, and he watched every penny that was spent to the point that all of the windows, because it was hitting the east and west sun, because it was had the exposure, their building, office building, had an exposure of east-west. So when the sun came up, it was hot, and when the sun went down, it was still hot on the other side of the building. So George Baker actually put paper, brown paper bags, cut them up, and pasted them on all of the windows. Now, keep in mind, this was back in the early 40s and 50s, and pasted them all on all of the windows so it would reduce the sun's rays. Of course, people couldn't see out of those windows, but that's the way George wanted it. And as soon as he sold it, of course, to Louis Bud Maytag, Bud Maytag decided, no, we're going to take those brown paper bags off the windows and we're going to get vertical blinds. And so they installed the vertical blinds. That was kind of an interesting footnote that we didn't talk about on the radio show. But it's things like that that we want to talk about on each one of our episodes. Jan, you have a comment?
Yes, I do, Neil. You mentioned George T. Baker. Is that the training school that's on 42nd Avenue?
You're right. And as a matter of fact, Jan, we talked about that also on our radio show Saturday, in that I graduated from Miami Tech High School, and the year I graduated was the last year that that school was in business, you might say. It was part of the Dade County school system, but it was a vocational and high school. So I went to that school. Usually guys that couldn't make it at Miami Jackson, Miami High School and all, you know, we were bad guys, and so they kicked us over to the vocational school. And fortunately, I'm glad they did kick me over, but...
That was the vocational school for aviation, wasn't it?
That's right. They had a lot of different courses there that was offered, mechanics, automobile mechanics. And my brother, as a matter of fact, went there 3 years earlier than I, and that's why I decided to go. But I got my A&P mechanics license there. But the year after I graduated, it moved across the street, 42nd Avenue, excuse me. And not moved across the street because it was downtown 14th Street in Miami. But at any rate, it moved out to the airport, and it was named George D. Baker School of Aviation. You're right.
Neil,
I remember they used to have to have like a railroad crossing across Lejeune.
That's right.
They would actually taxi the planes back and forth.
That's correct.
Wow. Neil, I wanted to ask you about will the Sunday airline shows, the episodes, be titled with an airline for each broadcast, as you have done for the first show?
Jan, thank you for asking that. Yes, for the initial programming at least. You know, we are restricted to 1/2 hour on that show. And when I say restricted, that's for a reason. And it's because of the economics of running that show. And so we decided to do a half-hour show. And we're going to try to feature an airline each broadcast. And I've kind of decided that Pan American might be our next choice. So, I'd like to do a different airline because that's the name of the show, Airline Radio Talk Show. And so we want to bring in as many people that would be interested in listening to a program that involved different airlines, not only American airline carrier or air carriers, but also carriers overseas. Maybe we can get Hector Santa Maria to come in and talk about Mexico, the Mexicana and Air Mexico Airlines. So we want to talk about different airlines, and the interest, I think, is there because we've had such a great interest in the EAL radio. But we want to try to get it more into a talk show format.
Neil, I think I could get one trip to come on online also.
How's that? You mean one
trip? That would be a good trip.
One trip.
It's called Resurrection.
Yeah, Resurrection.
Jan, I have a question for you. I think you started at Hartford Springfield. You were in reservations. I was on the counter. You were a number of months before me in 1957. Do you remember before Fred Blackwell as district manager, a fellow by the name of John Brinkerhoff?
No, I arrived when Fred was already there, so I didn't know the other gentleman that he replaced.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck, you had a comment?
Yeah, well, I think we've already covered it. I was thinking originally that it was going to be about an hour, but we're going to do a half-hour show.
Yeah,
and I was wondering exactly how the format, which you've already explained. So,
not tonight. Tonight we're 1 hour, right?
Right, one hour or
no, we're 1 hour tonight.
But the airline radio show is going to be a half-hour format, and hopefully we'll have enough interest as soon as we can find out how to get to the other air carriers. Now, I looked up. Because of National Airlines being our first show, I looked to see who might be available that I could email that we were going to talk about National. Do you remember the big brand or the logo on that? What was, as a matter of fact, that's a kind of a question for all of you guys. What was the logo of National Airlines toward the end of its life?
Mm-mm.
Anyone know?
Wasn't a stewardess in a bikini, was it?
No.
That was their Florida.
I thought it was something similar. I thought it was something similar to a sunburst.
You're right. It was a sunburst. And so the flight attendants actually, and it had the picture of the sunburst person, whatever they call it, and it was in a round circle, and it was on the tail of the aircraft. You remember what their tag was? Their besides National Airlines, you remember what their tagline was?
Number one to the sun.
That was Eastern.
That was Eastern. Come on, put your thinking caps on. Airline of the Stars.
That's
you
right.
Remember that?
That was it. That was it.
Yeah.
Airline of the Stars. And as a matter of fact, some of the top stars in those days of National, like Bob Hope, and I forgot the other ones, were really great fans and flew frequently with National Airlines wherever they went, wherever the system National went. So
well, but you can see it's got no recollection power.
Who? Who has no recollection?
The Airline to the Stars. None of us remembered it.
Neil, what topics are going to be covered, and are you going to have planning any skits in the programming? And also, speaking about airlines that we're going to feature, having worked for Piedmont, I've got an awful lot of material on Piedmont, and I could also probably contact some folks who work for them and have them participate in this. So I'll give you a hand on this if you would like, and give me some a few weeks' notice to put it together.
Okay, and I can tell you, and Jim probably would verify this, that agree with this, that the fact that a half hour goes pretty fast.
Oh, yes.
So when you have a half-hour show, you have a couple of songs or sound effects or commercials of that airline, it really does shoot right by, especially when you start talking about the history of that airline. And, I might add that I do have a website that has already been created for the airline radio talk show, and it will have a history. I've already got the history of the, I think, about six of the major carriers so far on that website. So, yeah, we'll put the history of that airline. Piedmont would be great, Steve, if you can get the material up. And keep in mind that when we start talking about it, the time goes by quickly. And as far as skits, you ask about skits in the programming. Yeah, we might do some of those, but I wouldn't want to do them as frequently as we did in the past year with the EAL radio show.
I think the Allegheny story, how it evolved into U.S. Airways, will be a very interesting program.
Yeah. Steve, you got more about that?
Yes. I was just thinking about the history of Piedmont prior to that, and then maybe we could pick up the merger into U.S. Airways at another time.
You know, we think of an airline today, and we trace it back to its roots. And it's amazing how the airline has metamorphosed into the present existing carrier's name, and U.S. Air, and we trace it back. It's just like Eastern Airlines. Eastern, of course, at one time used to be Pitcairn, and then moved over to Eastern Air Transport, mm-hmm. Eastern Airlines, and as a matter of fact, some purists of Eastern still use. Bill Malone was good about this in his writing, not good about it, but he was very picky about the fact that Eastern Airlines should be spelled A-I-R, capital L-I-N-E-S, three words for the name. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yes, I do.
But then it changed. The carrier corporate name changed to Eastern Airlines, one word, airlines.
You know, you mentioned also the frugal nature of the past president of National. I think Captain Eddie was quite frugal in that I understand that if any one of the department heads needed extra money for any kind of a program, they had to personally go to Captain Eddie for his approval.
Oh, really? But I bet he didn't have brown paper bags at 10 Rockefeller.
No, he knew Nelson Rockefeller, I'm sure.
Yeah.
There was a joke that he would count every paper clip, but I don't know if that's true.
I remember that, Jan.
I knew he was famous for putting his poster, and Captain Eddie says, you remember those posters?
Oh, I remember that.
Yes.
From the Res days, yes.
Yeah. But we would like to really do this radio show primarily as a call-in radio talk show and allowing the greater portion to callers with stories to share news and historical accounts about their airlines, interviews and good sound effects about the airlines we feature on the show. So that's what our plan is for the airline radio talk show. Jim?
Neil. And I did the very first episode this past Saturday, and we used a National Airlines TV commercial. It was an aviation theme music for sign-on and sign-off, and it was just so well received in terms of my understanding. Chuck, do you have a comment?
Well, not more of a comment. I was just wondering that... You know me, being a mechanic, I was wondering if we were going to hear some more mechanical stories on the show. You know, perhaps some maintenance topics in the future show.
Chuck,
to add to that if I can, Chuck. I remember the days in propellers when maintenance was so crucial. We had a 30, 60, 90, 120, and 240-hour check. The 240... They practically tore the engine apart. Am I correct there?
Yeah, that's pretty close. They got it down to a basic engine.
And, of course, a lot of the stuff had to be replaced anyway, especially the old radios way back. And even up to when we worked on some of the prop jets, they had them be tore down, too, at certain hours. But, yeah, you're right. They really got into them. And, boy, were they a mess. They were the greasiest things you've ever seen.
I tell you why I remember this, Chuck. I was in the military 5 years in the Korean thing. I was an aircrew member on a P-2V Neptune patrol bomber. And we had the R-3350s, I believe it was, turbo compound engines.
Right.
And
right.
I was so impressed. I've always been impressed with engines. So I took some courses, and I became the only electronic technician who was a qualified plane captain because I knew my airframe and power plants.
Well, that's pretty good. I know some of the airlines that even we have today are requiring some of their flight crews to have A&P license. Some of the smaller airlines.
Uh-huh.
So they're kind of double duty there.
You know, I said to Neil during our Saturday talk show how impressed I have been with a captain or a first officer doing a pre-flight, walking around the aircraft looking for various possible, you know, problems. And anyone with an A&P license, I feel very, very confident when I know they're out there looking because they know what to look for.
I've got one story I've got to tell popped into my mind, Jim, when you started talking about doing pre-flight inspections.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a brand new co-pilot in Washington, D.C. On the Convair 440. This was back in 63. And we were going to Louisville, Kentucky, making our first stop in Lexington. And it originated early in the morning, I think around 6:30 or 7 o'clock in the morning. And the captain says, well, Neil, go on and do the pre-flight, outside pre-flight. And I did. I did the pre-flight. And when I got back into the cockpit, I did the cockpit pre-flight as best I could, being a brand new co-pilot. But along with the captain, I forgot who the captain was now, but an FAA inspector. And the FAA inspector started to do the pre-flight right behind me having done the pre-flight. He did his own pre-flight.
Uh-huh.
And here the captain and I were sitting in the cockpit now, and I was getting ready to get a clearance. The FAA guy comes running up to the cockpit, and he says, you're not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. And we wondered what in the world he was talking about. But he brought me and the captain both down to the wheel well, the right main gear. You remember those scissor forks that retract the gear in the wheel wells? Well, that clevis bolt, I want to call it a clevis bolt, about the size of it must be a 1.5-inch diameter bolt or more, maybe 2-inch diameter bolt,
mm-hmm.
that fit right in the scissor part of it.
To keep it from collapsing.
Yeah, collapsing. The nut had fell off the end of the bolt.
Ooh.
And so here, this thing was just ready on probably the next retract to come unglued. And, of course, we had the mechanic come on. They took a while before they got a part for it. But they actually found that bolt in Binghamton, New York. They found on the runway that they found a runway. That airplane had been all around the system up to Binghamton, New York, and apparently they found some FOD or whatever they call it on the runway, and it was this bolt from our airplane, they theorized, because it fit that bolt. So it was kind of interesting. So you do pre-flights, and it's always good to have as many eyes looking around for problems.
That's right.
Before you get airborne, And that's when it really paid off, because his eyes really caught it. He didn't write me up, fortunately. He didn't. I got my job. I was still on probation then, and I worried about that.
Neil, I have a pre-flight humorous story, I think, that will be interesting. We were I was trained as an engineer, and in the early days, I think it was a 272 group or whatever it was. But anyway, we were flying a 727 trip from Miami to Montreal in the wintertime. Now, the custom was that the senior person would start out in the co-pilot seat, and the junior man would sit at the engineer's panel on the 727. That was just kind of an unwritten rule. Now, this particular month, I'm teamed up with this guy who's junior to me, and so I check in for my trip to Montreal thinking I'm going out to do the pre-flight, because the guy that does the pre-flight in Miami has to do the one in Montreal. So, or the custom is that he will do the one coming back from Montreal. So I get to the airport to check in for my trip, and the fellow who's junior to me is he's already done the pre-flight in Miami. So we get to Montreal, and then on the way back southbound, in the middle of the winter, and the temperature is minus whatever. And I have to go out and do the pre-flight. So I just overlooked that this time. So the next trip, I think, well, I'm going to get, instead of an hour ahead of time, I'm going to get there about an hour and 15 or 20 minutes ahead of time. He's already out at the airplane, already done the pre-flight. I mean, something wrong with this picture. So I get to Montreal, I get the pre-flight at Montreal coming southbound. So the next time, I say, well, I get there an hour and a half or hour and 45 minutes before trip time. And sure enough, he's already there and done the pre-flight. So I think the next trip, I said, I'm not swapping seats. You can do the pre-flight both ways. But he had that figured out. He wasn't going to do that pre-flight in Montreal.
And those were the days of what we call seat swapping days, Steve.
That's right. Right.
Yeah. And I went out to the airport one time, and the guy was senior to me. But he says, Neil, how about flying the entire trip? Let's don't seat swap. I said, boy, that'd be, are you sure? I love to fly, you know. Yeah, I'd do that. And so I found out why. It was one of the worst captains to fly with that Eastern had on the seniority list. So he didn't want to sit in the right seat. He wanted to be the engineer. So, but at any rate, I'd like to talk more about maintenance. Chuck, I'm sure you probably would like to have maybe a maintenance topic for a future show. Jan, would you like that?
Yeah, I think that. Oh, Jan, go ahead, Jan.
Jan, yeah.
Yes, I do concur with that. However, telling the listeners about all the problems you guys had to fix each day, the airline may lose a few of the white-knuckled flyers. As long as the details are not too technical, I think the people would certainly enjoy the show.
Yeah, I've often thought about, do you remember that old television series, Candid Camera?
Yes, yes, I sure do.
I was going to write in or however to see if I could alert them to an interesting Candid Camera type of scenario that they could shoot. And it was about an airplane that was on jacks. The landing gear was retracted. The airplane was sitting out at the ramp on jacks. Both engines missing. And then announced the departure time for that flight of those people in the lobby looking out at that airplane. And I'll bet you anything they would actually walk down the aisle to get on the airplane in that situation. But in my mind, it was a funny scene. But, Jim, let's remind our callers again.
Yes, Neil, let me remind our listeners once again of our call-in phone numbers, 213-816-1611, or toll-free at 877-572-1861. And remember, to chat with our host, just press number 1 on your telephone dial and give us a call and become a regular member on our show. We would really enjoy it.
Well, Neil, how do we look? You got any callers, or should we continue this discussion?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about, hey, somebody popped up on the screen, I think. I'm not sure who it is, but we'll certainly find out the area code. What is the area code, 305?
That's Miami.
Miami.
Yeah, that's Miami.
Who's with us on 305?
Franklin Ross.
Hey, Franklin, how are you doing?
Not too bad. I've been sitting here listening to you guys talk, especially when you were talking about Rickenbacker. But when I came in 54, I started as a cleaner and then as an apprentice mechanic, and then eventually in 62 I went into management. But but in those days, everything that was over $50 went across Rickenbacker's desk.
That's what I remembered.
Oh, yeah,
we have everything today.
Right, yeah, the superintendent up in the shop was trying to buy a lathe, and he bought it a piece at a time, and I'll never forget that when I was there, until they needed the bed for the thing, and, of course, that was more than what he was allocated to spend, and Rickenbacker says, well, I spent all that other money. I guess I better let you buy that. So,
you mean when you guys ordered some type of equipment? I can't remember. I was hired in 63. So you guys are before my time.
You're
and Rickenbacker, yeah, was the chairman of the board when I was hired on, and Floyd Hall just came to the property. But you mean to say that if you wanted to buy, a lathe, you actually had to put in a request for that, and it went to Rickenbacker's desk?
Yep. That's the way it went in those days. What's the guy that came from the military?
Gorman?
Before Hall.
That was the galley shuttle.
McIntyre.
McIntyre, yeah.
Malcolm McIntyre.
The guy with the big education that could outswear everybody. But I always thought swearing was good. You didn't know what to say, but he didn't. That wasn't his case. He just liked to swear.
Well,
Do you remember his wife produced a cookbook, what was produced by the company and circulated? Everyone in the company got a copy of Mrs. McIntyre's cookbook.
Oh, yes, I do. Right.
All
it's
right.
Probably here someplace in this in this mess I got down here.
He
but
must
the,
have gone.
But
he have
you
a workout
were talking
room?
About that. Pardon
didn't
me?
Didn't he have a workout room and building in New York? At
oh,
the home
yeah.
Office?
Yep, he did with that and with that, but I never had too much respect for him after I was around him a lot, because I actually worked closely in maintenance, and then I was in Washington in 62 after the flight engineers strike for a few months, and then they called me wanted me to go into maintenance. I'd been an apprentice mechanic, and the vice president said, I hate to spend that money on you. I'm going to put you in management. I think that was punishment. But anyway.
Well, Franklin, were you in management when Higginbotham was head of the maintenance department?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yep. I was there. Yep. I was with that. I was never a foreman. I went, I went into a program we were supposed to rotate with all the maintenance people as staff assistant there, and I worked with Bill Bulford. I don't know whether you ever knew him, but he was that's when you had a superintendent of maintenance for the whole airline, and I worked with him, and then they sent me back in 63. I was there 63 to 65 to try and help straighten up Washington. They had a lot of mess up there, but a lot of it was management mess.
Mm-hmm.
So
Franklin, do you remember Frank Sharp and Bill Cambray?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do.
Yep. Ambrose Shabbat? Mm-hmm.
Ambrose Shabbat, yep. Ambrose Shabbat's the one that promoted me.
Oh.
Yeah. All the stewardesses knew him, though, you know.
Yeah, a lot. His son, Ambrose Jr., checked me out in the in the air for my airline transport pilot rating.
Oh, yeah. He was a nice fellow. Yeah, you know, he lived down not too far from where the Children's Hospital is down here in near Coral Gables. Is where
Senior
Chabot, where Chabot lived. Yeah.
Okay.
Franklin, do you think you could get some of your friends who served with you to come online with us and continue this kind of a discussion? It's fantastic.
It really is.
I don't know whether I could or not. I can try.
What's your last name? Franklin, what's your last name before?
Ross, R-O-S-S.
Okay, very good.
Yeah,
Thank you.
I had charge of the interiors for quite a long while. I was in the design committee for the L-1011 and when it was being built and all, and I worked a lot with Borman because he was interior man.
Well, did you ever come across the path of that really, really, really mean Chuck Albright maintenance down in Miami?
Yeah, I know Chuck. Chuck was, yeah. But I worked a lot with that and the interior. Well, I got to work with most of the top management because Borman had everybody down when they did seat changes, and we did seat changes at one time on the 727, and I made him prove to me financially that what we were doing would pay off, and he did. He had Charlie Simons.
Yeah.
Franklin, was that the 727 QC?
Yeah, oh, that was a disaster. The switching the seats back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they tried that. My brother worked at Eastern, and then he worked at also at UPS, and they tried it there, too. And he tried to tell them, why don't you talk to my brother before you do that? But they didn't, and they had a mess, too. But also Pan Am did. Pan Am had a thing where they switched seats between here and Puerto Rico and back, but they damaged so much seats they finally quit it. And that's what happened at Eastern, too, with the taking the interiors out, and then you couldn't help but would damage some of it, you know.
You mean ripping upholstery and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, we had people working on that all the time. And I actually started the first seat program. I took all my EOs when I took charge of the seat shop and took them up to the chief engineer and said, here, what do I do with these? Oh, you do those on, this was like the 727 in Atlanta. I said, that's only in there 24 hours. I said, all these have to have the seats out. So after that, we started a seat program that for repairing the seats and all. And so and we did most of the work in-house, too, with that. So,
well, that's
No, I loved every minute of Eastern. I was in charge of a program that at the end, well, I was actually superintendent of the director, I guess they called it, of the shops at one time. And then I went in and do a special a special program where we tracked all the Eastern parts that were serialized. And that was just starting to come into fruition when it shut down because we could tell engineering I could tell them every part that needed, because sometimes you have parts that weren't the problem, were the problem, not the airplane. You know, and
when did you retire, Frank?
Yeah, in 92.
92, okay.
At the end of the line. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I could have stayed longer, but I had people working for me. Then I had charge of all the aircraft records, and I had people that didn't have a job, but I at least could take my retirement and lose my $400 a month that good old Frank Lorenzo did.
Mm-hmm.
I think back on that, yeah. That's a lot of money.
Franklin, I remember that the northbound trips, which were loaded with freight, were very,
yeah.
very. They were, you know, money makers.
Yeah.
But now I know why. On the southbound trip, we used to give all of the passengers very dark glasses, so they couldn't see the tears in the upholstery. Right?
No, that no, it did. It did. It tore them up pretty bad. And then, of course, they were supposed to all be automatically switch in, you know, that replace. But all the airplanes aren't as exact as Boeing would like you to think they were.
Yeah.
So, but I'm listening to you here on here too, as we talk. Then later on, I hear myself.
Yeah, you might want to turn it down and
feedback.
You know, a good thing about our radio shows is they're all archived. I don't know how long you've been listening to us, Franklin, but. But we do have every show. This is our 70th show.
Yeah,
tonight.
I've listened to quite a few of them.
Okay.
Some of them, I'm sure.
You probably, some of them put you to sleep or either.
Right. Well, really... I don't have the same opinion of Floyd Hall that you guys did, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we try not to get too much into politics of Eastern.
No, right. That's the trouble
we're,
I got
we're,
into.
We're
too
pretty
much of
glad
that
we did talk to him because I feel like that we got in touch with him about a year before he passed away.
Uh-huh.
And from what his daughter told us, and his grandson, that his dad, their father, really enjoyed listening to us, and it meant a lot to him that people were sending letters for his health and of course his birthday, and I think maybe that added a few days to his life.
Well, I'm sure that it did. No, I'm not saying that. Just some of the practices I didn't like it, it was a difficult time when you were there, when he came, and he spent quite a bit of money that trying to bring it up, and but you had a lot of things working against us at the time, too.
Franklin,
so.
Would you stay with us while we cut for an advertisement from
sure.
Eastern Airlines?
Yeah.
Hold on, here it comes.
Hey, funny face.
Hi.
Guess what? I'm going out of town tomorrow to the sales conference.
Out of town? Can't they send somebody else?
No, honey. It's my big idea about the conveyor.
Well, can't you send them a letter?
Uh-uh.
Or a phone call? A smoke signal?
No, honey. It's my idea about the conveyor, and I've got to be there to present it in person. It's a big opportunity.
I know. I'm very happy. Got your tickets?
Eastern Airlines.
When we be back?
Same day, tomorrow night.
Oh, you mean you'll be home tomorrow?
Yeah, Eastern has a schedule where you go in the morning, come back in the evening.
Oh, honey, they're just going to love your idea about the conveyor.
I love you.
Mm-hmm.
Eastern Airlines has same-day return schedules to many cities, including Chicago and Atlanta. Eastern will fly you to your business meeting in the morning, then bring you home for a goodnight kiss. Wherever you want to go, call Eastern and ask. Getting home is half the fun. Come fly with Eastern.
Hey, Bill, I wish it only took a commercial like that to change my wife's attitude.
So, yeah, but I enjoy the show. Sometimes I can't get near to listen to it, but I do enjoy the show quite a bit. And I enjoyed the one when I finally realized you were doing a skit and not an actual with a new airline.
Franklin, yeah. Could you leave us your email address?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Give it to us now.
Okay, fhross12@bellsouth.net.
Very good.
So that, the only reason I retired was because I had to. I'd probably worked till they threw me out. But I enjoyed everything I did at ease. That's my wife said that was my problem.
You were
Franklin,
always in
I think that we, Franklin, I think that we all feel the same way.
Yeah, right. So the thing of it is that we did have a lot of good people there, and even with the union. Of course, I worked the union for quite a bit of time. I found out I was the most feared guy in the union hall, but trouble was I went by the book. So, but sometimes you got overrode. So.
Did you know a mechanic by the name of Larry Sapp?
Yes, Larry Sapp, I know. Yes, a lot of those that I can't read. I had a lot of people, met a guy the other day that his father worked for me.
Oh, my God.
On there. It was in a radio shop. So.
Well, I know Chuck's father. Now, Chuck, your father worked for Eastern, too, didn't he?
Yeah, he started in 1937. He was,
wow.
Yeah, he's one of the 12 original managers that Captain Eddie had put together to keep the airline going through the war. He stayed until 1952, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And
see, I actually worked on the DC-3 that he allegedly gave to the radio host.
Arthur Godfrey?
Oh, Godfrey.
Arthur Godfrey. Godfrey.
Yeah, I worked to work on his airplane, so that to but that and I, but the thing we hated to work on was the Northwest airplane, especially the Convairs and all those. I don't think they ever worked on them. We get them in there sometimes and be in there 3 or 4 days trying to get them operating.
And that's one of the airlines I bought stock from way back then.
Yeah, right. So, but well, you know, Joe Leonard came from Northwest. They, it was when he was there. Well, he became chairman of the board then, but he was vice president of maintenance there when I got promoted. I tried to talk him out of it, but he wouldn't listen to me.
Well, the dean of Eastern Airlines maintenance has to have been Johnny Ray.
Oh yes, yes.
Does anyone know any history about Johnny?
Johnny
Franklin
Ray was
Musk.
The first mechanic hired. I had lunch with him one day.
He even after he was retired, they regularly come into the engine shop every week. It was when he wasn't there later on when he got sick. Everybody wondered, you know, what happened to him. So
yeah.
But
didn't he start with Pitcairn?
You know, I'm not positive.
And neither am I.
I'll have to look that up in my records here.
Neil, we're getting along in the program. Do you know if Vito has come online as yet?
No, I really didn't expect Vito tonight to be online. I emailed him and asked him to see if he would be on next week's show.
The president of the Retirees Association just passed away, so he might be tied up with that.
Can you tell us a little bit about that, Jim R. Franklin?
Say that again?
The president of EARA. Does anyone have any details about that?
No, I didn't. I worked with him as a mechanic, and that's when he found out he only had one kidney in, but this is when he had kidney problems, and I talked with him in the office that he'd fell and broke all his teeth there when he was there. He died last Thursday night. So they called to let me know, but I didn't get any details, and I meant to do that today and got tied up to see, but there's nothing in the paper down here about it. So,
well, maybe Vito can give us a little more information next Monday.
Right.
I'm going to invite him to be with us along with Ed Weigel.
I'll tell you what, he's the one that's got us all the past privileges we had. Vito.
He sure did. Yeah,
he's a fantastic man, and his son flies for United.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so
Vito, of course, becomes our new president as of this event.
Right. Yeah,
he the first president after died? What's his name? Ross? LaRue.
John DeRose?
DeRose.
Yes, I believe he was.
I think Vito became president and stayed president for many years.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
Speaking of past privileges, Bill, I understand you're planning a trip to Syria next month. And wondering if your passes would work, and I'm suggesting that El Al is starting a Miami to Damascus service, and there's going to be plenty of seats on it, and they'll honor our passes.
I have
any of interline agreement with any other airline going over there.
Now, wait a minute.
I don't want to put up with you guys.
I want to hear Bill's answer to Steve's question.
But actually, I've been in touch with El Al on that, Steve, and they're going to extend that flight from Grand Junction through Miami, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I've
got to hang up, so I'll let you guys go. But thanks
Franklin,
for listening.
thank you very much.
Franklin, please come back any show, okay?
Okay, will do.
Thanks
bye
so
bye
much.
Now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bill, I have an AK-47 you could take with you on this trip.
Well,
I don't know where you guys get this stuff from.
I really wanted to know, has anyone actually used any of the interline passes? Because I would like to plan a trip out to L.A. to see my son and his new wife. And has anyone used the pass privileges that we have through EARA?
Not since TWA was in existence, and I don't recommend it.
I have a better way of pass riding, and that is have two children who work for airlines.
Oh yeah,
and get your passes.
yeah, that
Smart
would be.
Man.
That's a real hard way of getting a pass, though.
This is Jim.
I understand now that at least with British Airways that we have the capability of positive space. There's an agreement. And in addition to that, there's a discount off of the excursion fare, which is, I don't know, 20 or 30%. And I would love to see this kind of an arrangement occurring, because pass privileges, I think, are way in the past, especially now that the airlines have fewer flights operating. And you know, unless you have a lot of time, but for a person who has a busy schedule, it's very challenging to fly standby.
The unfortunate thing is that you should travel on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. Stay away from all the other days because of business travel people.
Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, huh?
Yep.
Okay, I'll put that down.
And I'll keep that one in mind, Jim. Thanks.
You're welcome, Jan.
Yeah, okay. Well, I still have some C3 passes that I can sell you. You might laugh.
I've got a stock
that,
certificate for you.
But I really do. I've got a ton of them. I mean, one of the boxes was full of passes, C3 passes. So...
those were in the days when you could write your own C3s?
Right. It was. Yeah.
Anil, I have a bunch of C1s, but the only thing is you had to be very careful to make sure that there were no oversales before you got on board.
Yeah. Well, I know my kids really took advantage of the C3s, and my son used to enjoy going out to Salt Lake and Park City and skiing, and took my daughter on several trips with me, and those were the good old days.
We've got just minutes left, right?
Just a few minutes left, yeah. What would you like to say, Jim?
I was thinking we ought to go to page 4, and at the top of the page, Bill.
Well, what I'm going to say is it's time for another Eastern Airlines commercial.
It sure is. Let's listen to that.
Take a second now, look up in the sky, can't you see the bluebird? That's an eastern plane flying through the sky, shouldn't that be you there?
You gotta believe, it's for you. You gotta believe, things come true. You gotta believe and look it up now. Look it up now, look it up.
Neil, why don't you sign off?
Well, I was going to let Jan, since Margaret is not with us. Jan, I hear the sound of the music in the background. Would you please sign us off?
Of course, Neil. Ladies and gentlemen, we've enjoyed being with you this evening, and we hope in our future shows you will call and take part, relive a part of your career years with Eastern. You've heard a lot of us talking, a lot of talking by our hosts. And we were fortunate to have a call this evening, but we truly would like to hear from each and every one of you. Tell us what you think of our shows. Share your ideas on how we might improve our broadcast. tell us who you think would be a good guest to interview, or talk about anything aviation related that you might want to talk about. We know many people are taking vacations this time of year. This may be a good time to mention to you that you can catch our show regardless of where you are. All you need is either a computer or a telephone. Call the number that has been discussed and mentioned during our show, or check us out on your laptop or stationary desktop computer.
Jan, that's all we have for tonight. So we've run out of time. So we must say night, Eastern people.
Good night, Eastern
good night,
people.
Good
night, Eastern
good night,
people.
Eastern.
Good night.
Very good program.
Good show.
It's a wish.
Very good.
And a prayer that every dream comes true.